I turned 12 on July 18th, 1933, the day we left Missouri. Mama said there'd be no cake this year. She said I was getting a whole new life for my birthday instead, like I was being born all over again. I didn't care about the cake, but I sure didn't want a new life. My old one suited me just fine. We were leaving Missouri because Daddy couldn't make a living there as a mechanic anymore. Not as a carpenter, either. I asked him why, and he said, "When farmers suffer, Sadie, everyone suffers." The drought had sucked the land dry, and it threatened to suck us dry, too, if we didn't get away. So Daddy sold our house for what he could get, a piddling amount, Mama called it, and we were up before daylight, squeezing our belongings into the car. Daddy said he wanted to be on the road before the sun could shrivel one more blade of grass. But even the black of early morning felt hot enough to do that. Sweat crawled all over me like ants, and my damp dress clung to my legs while I worked. There didn't seem to be enough dark in the world to cool off the heat our land soaked up every day. We packed Daddy's books, Charles Dickens and Daniel Defoe, Herman Melville and James Fenimore Cooper, the dozens of adventures he'd read to us chapter by chapter as far back as I could remember. We stuffed them into crates with the pots and bedding and tied everything to the car roof and down the running boards. Everything but the furniture. It didn't matter much that our beds and chairs sat in bare rooms waiting for new owners, but I hated leaving the table behind. I knew Mama did, too. Daddy had built that shiny drop-leaf table himself and given it to Mama the day they got married. She promised it'd be mine someday. I never knew Mama to break a promise. I went back inside to see if she'd finished with the kitchen and found her wiping down the stove. Her hands looked pale as a new moon against the black iron, and her belly, slightly rounded with the new baby, rubbed against the stove edge. Long strands of dark hair, loose from their pins, swung with the rhythm of her cleaning. Seeing her shine everything for someone else made my stomach turn sour. I shoved back my own dark hair, sticky with sweat, and felt anger heat up my cheeks. She could have talked to Daddy like I asked her to. She could have reminded him of how wearisome a trip could be and about the baby she lost when me and Jacob were little. If she had, we might not be leaving. I ducked my head and ran a finger around the smooth edge of the table, too mad at Mama to look at her anymore. It wasn't fair we had to give up so much. My bitterness must have pushed a scowl onto my face, 'cause Mama leaned close and whispered, "Daddy said he'd make us another table, Sadie, for our new life." I nodded, but I knew it'd never be the same. When we'd loaded all we could, 3-year-old Bobby crawled into the front seat beside Daddy. I waited outside for Mama and took a last look toward the withered fields. I couldn't see much in the dark, but it didn't matter. I'd never get the picture of stunted grain, broken and spent, out of my head. I'd heard wind rattle through their papery bones so long I couldn't remember what quiet green days were like anymore. I turned, skimmed the empty grain silos, and squinted down the road toward town. The halo of light on the horizon, faithful as the rising sun, was gone now. No one lit the street lamps in town anymore. Nothing had been the same for a long time, especially since Wilma left last month. The drought took everything from her family, too, like it did the Fosters, the Sullingers, and the Varners. Wilma was luckier than most, though. She knew where she was going. Family in California had offered to take them in, and she'd given me their address. We promised to write every day till we could see each other again. I glanced east and saw clouds tinged with pink and purple. The sun would be up soon, and by mid-morning, the brown fields and meadows would hum with heat. But I'd be gone by then. There'd be no more swimming in the river. No more purple fingers from ripe dewberries. And never again would I have a friend as good as Wilma to tell my thoughts to. I turned my back on the parched land and climbed into the back seat beside 5-year-old Emily. Her eyes shone from beneath her bangs, and she grinned at me, too excited about the trip to understand what we were giving up. Jacob, who was 10, wiggled between Emily and the window and set her to whining. He looked at me and shrugged, like it embarrassed him some that he was happy about the move and I wasn't. Daddy was ready to leave, but Mama pulled the broom from the running board of the car and headed for the porch, determined to leave it clean. Sweeping seemed a waste of time to me. The wind was bound to get up like it did every day and blow the dusty yard onto the porch again. But Mama didn't care. She said the house had given its best and deserved no less from us.